Welcome to the Autism Roundtable. I'm Leah Gross, founder of Circle Care Services. I'll bring you autism experts from all kinds of fields for helpful parenting ideas, insights, and strategies. Tune in for learning and support and connection. Welcome, Luba, to the Autism Roundtable. Thank you so much for joining us. Can you please introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about your background and your relationship to the autism community?
Yes, thank you so much for having me. My name is Luba Patlak-Kaplan, and I am the owner and director and lead speech-language pathologist at Kinology, Inc. We're a pediatric early intervention and private care clinic. So we service a large population of autistic children on a variety of levels of the spectrum. And it's really a blessing to be in our shoes so we can help so many families.
That's amazing. Tell us a little bit about your inspiration and how you got there.
So I actually went to school for broadcast journalism, definitely not speech pathology, but I always had a love of communication and people. And I completely fell in love with a linguistics class that I took in one of the semesters at school. And I was just so far in my program. So I graduated, I tried to work, it did well, but I always felt like something was maybe missing for me. And when I decided to go back for a master's program, I found and fell in love with speech language pathology, which also encompassed that linguistic quality. And I started to work, and it took off from there. And now we're a two-clinic practice with two brick-and-mortar locations that both have two sensory play gyms inside. And we now are the proud owner of a mobile therapy bus unit. So we actually are taking our clinic room and putting it on the road to whoever may need our assistance.
Oh, that is so awesome and so creative. How did you come up with that idea?
Thank you so much. So you start to kind of hear a lot of families over time. Actually, one of my first offices where I used to be located, there were not any bus routes in the local area there. It was very, very suburban. If you didn't have a car or access to maybe Uber or a taxi or a ride, you weren't going to get there because the bus will drop you off like 25 minutes on the road. But if there's weather, I mean, it's unreliable. So the next location I got had many different bus routes and a lot of more accessibility. But what I started to find was that families weren't always able to get there. Either the family did not drive, they were busy with other children at some location, or they were going to a day program and going to work. So really, unfortunately, just due to life, the child would have to come secondary at that time, and they would wait months to get an eval, or they would finally get in, and then they couldn't start the service. Well, things have come up, we can't get there. So I feel like, I used to think to myself, well, I can't get people to come to me, and the providers are going out to different centers and things, but if we can't access the family by inviting them to us, how else can we invite them? And obviously, while it's a dream of mine, it's not always possible to be a business in all of these locations at one time. It's a progressive growth. So I thought, what is my next step? I have these two clinics. Should I build another clinic right away? Oh, well, what about if I have a clinic on wheels? And I'm like, okay, well, it has to be manageable. I can't get a big yellow bus. Who's going to drive it? So I got a half bus. And I redesigned it to be just like one of my in-house therapy rooms, the one-on-one rooms we sit in on. And has storage with a lot of supplies and an area for us to sit with the child and a little slide. And it's actually a place where we can interchange the things. So I took the liberty to try it out, and the clinic on wheels was born.
Wow. Okay. Do you find that you use it often?
It's very new. So we're just, I finally got I racked the bus because it was a New York Mets bus. And in these parts where I live, that did not fly, obviously. And then we had it wrapped, and that took some time. And then after that, it was the new year, and I had it taken to a special shop where they did the whole interior. The shop is very formal in this. They work on police vehicles that do interiors and sometimes therapists that do like wellness on site. So it was a new project for them as well, but we created an idea of what we wanted, and I have just got it back. And actually next Wednesday is the first day that we're going to take it out to kids. We're going to be in Delaware County, which is another county in Pennsylvania that we actually don't have a presence in at all. So we're super excited because we're going to be in a school and the surrounding homes there. And it's a new start to a new location.
That is so fabulous and so out of the box thinking.
I love that.
But I think
we're going to be using it all the time because people are curious. People also have children who love buses and they're like, could you just drive by and honk? Who knew? We're going to be doing that. Let's back to COVID times. Drive by birthday.
Love that. And tell us a little bit about your Kidology gyms. How did that get inspired? Because I've seen so many different facilities and none of them have a beautiful gym. And I think you told me that you opened it up to the community. So tell us a little bit about that.
So the original Kidology place-based gym that I had was off of my second location. It was actually a storefront that was two doors down from me. There were other businesses in between that ended up closing down after. But at the moment, there was this beautiful shell in the same plaza where I was. And I asked the landlord, I said, would you give me a shot if I wanted to check it out in there? And he actually was so kind. He gave me a few months for free to start. But then he said to me, well, if you decide to close it in a couple of months, and then I looked at him and I said, when you see what I'm going to build in there, you're going to understand I'm not closing it. So better take off. So we had a good conversation and then I ended up opening it. And I was very lucky. It was immediately after COVID. Like when things started to just calm down, people were coming in again. And like, you're probably wondering, are you crazy in COVID? You're building a gym for people? Like, yes, I took that chance because I also have had at the time very small children. Now my children are a bit older, but I saw a need for a safe place where kids can play that is not only an outdoor playground and it wasn't a trampoline park or something that we already had. Plus, I recognize that a lot of families who bring their children to us for physical and occupational therapy, those kids were getting so acquainted with the space and we had this back room there. I'm like, this could be cool. Like maybe these families would be interested in throwing the birthday here. Their child wouldn't feel misplaced and they already know everything and they can have such a good time. And that kind of started to take off. People were like, oh, can I bring an animator here next Saturday and throw my son a birthday? And we created packages and we opened it up for daily play. It wasn't as popular at that location then because I think it was just very new and post-COVID. But then once we moved, I opened my Southampton location and I built a different gym there, a jungle gym. It got very, very popular. It was like in a separate room in my facility. And while families were super excited to utilize this during therapy, they saw how much fun their kids were having jumping on the trampoline there and being able to do so physically because they learned, or walking up the gripped staircase and being independent. Now, not every family has staircases in their home. So that was a measure of training, too. We teach kids how to utilize their mobility properly. But there's slides, there's ball pit, there's imaginative play. So when they're coming there, they're learning and using it in their therapy. But then it is open to the public. They can come any day, 9:30 to 6 o'clock, and walk in. They have 3-hour tickets. And then on the weekend, we have birthday parties. But we do have availability as well to come in if there are not birthday parties occupying the space.
So awesome. So cool. So tell us a little bit about your journey of starting as a speech therapist and then incorporating all the different therapies. Why did you go that direction? And maybe start and tell us a little bit about what speech therapy does for children that are on the autism spectrum.
Absolutely. So whenever, and I always say this line, life is hard as it is, but even harder when you have a disability or something that you need to work harder on. So becoming a speech language pathologist, especially because I'm a bilingual speech language pathologist, I work with some of the Russian community because I speak English and Russian. And I really wanted to start to entice families by offering special services for their children, letting them know that there's somebody there to support them. A lot of people that I was meeting in my community were saying that they didn't feel there was somewhere to go where people understood them or that they could really grasp what was going on with their child. And because I was able to connect on that level with them and more so explain in their language, both mentally and as a parent and in the actual language, they found faith in me. They were like, okay, I think this girl can help me. And then I started to see, okay, they don't only need speech. They need OT. They need PT. They need behavior services. And I wanted them to have that continuity of care in one place. So I started to build a multidisciplinary clinic because I was able to then have co-treat and I can work with an OT during the session. I can work with a PT because a lot of the things that are happening do coincide. They go hand in hand. If there's a PT who needs a child to follow expressively or receptively, like answering questions or listening to directions, they may need the support of another aide, like a speech therapist there who's already working with the child, especially autistic children who have some different needs. Sometimes they require a little bit more handholding. A lot of children on the spectrum, autistic children, are super, super intelligent, but they think differently, where they hear things differently. So they really need proper consistency, proper repetitive practice to ensure their success. So being able to offer not only speech therapy was already a huge thing, aiding the family, but also now adding in that multidiscipline is really just, like I'll say, a home run. It really works across the board.
Yeah, and it is really so important for these children that are struggling in so many different areas to have like a collaborative team. So that is so cool that you're able to have the speech therapist, the occupational therapist, the physical therapist, and the behavioral therapist all together. How many hours a week do, like if a child's taking a full package, what would a week in the day, you know, what would a week look like for that child? How much hours of OT are they getting? How much speech, how much PT, and how much ABA?
This is a really, 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 really good question. It's so important, though, that from the initial time that the child comes in, obviously, they get a comprehensive evaluation. Usually, people come in because they have one need, and then it's uncovered that, oh, they may need something else or the full lot, a global review. And it's hard to give you an exact answer because every child's needs are different. But from the minute that they're evaluated, there's goals that are created for them. And based on the diagnosis that we see, the goals that we create, that is how it's developed. But generally speaking, I want to say the average child, autistic or not, will come in between 1 to 3 times a week per service. We often try to make it back to back or do the co-treat because we understand it is very time consuming for parents to come and sit there and they have to be on site for emergency reasons. And to learn as well. But yeah, I would say definitely the speech 2 times a week in between 30 to 45 minutes. And then for OT and PT, which can go hand in hand, like I said, it's sometimes gym play. It's sometimes one-on-one in the room. And then the gym play is the reward. It's sometimes everybody's in the gym together. So like one big group therapy where we create a really cool program for them. But there are, every child is unique. So it's very hard. There's no standardized amount.
Right. Wow. Wow. And how do you find behavioral therapy complements or is different to the speech and occupational therapy?
Behavior services are quite different. They almost tie in everything that the child is learning in the other disciplines. In behavior services, for example, a child comes to the clinic and the mom's like, we have a speech delay. So we evaluate, but the child is completely non-participating, non-verbal, throwing themselves on the floor, tantruming, unable to transition. We do identify that it's maybe not speech delay first, it's a behavior delay. So then we recommend for behavior services, but during the behavior service, they will also get a speech therapist or whatever therapist they need. Say they can't hold utensils, they would need an occupational therapist. I feel that before you can tackle the other therapy realms like speech, OT, or PT, you will need to address and work on proper behavior and skills like transitioning, perhaps like listening after a certain amount of times or what we would like to see the first time. So really behavior is different because it works on those skills that are day to day versus more specifically like expressive or receptive skills. They do tie into behavior, absolutely, but that's a different skill set. If a child is, you know, swelling their R's at the end of every sentence, and then when they're not understood, they're like very upset we're going to work on them understanding the behavior here. Hey, it's no big deal. People will understand you. Let's calm down. Let's work on our skill and we'll achieve the goal. So it almost goes hand in hand with each category. It's like a global piece that you need to have in place or working towards to be successful in the other therapies.
Love that. Really, really awesome. Now, tell me a little bit about what expressive language looks like. You know, we have a big spectrum here. So there's the nonverbal, there's the verbal, and then there's the high functioning. How would expressive language look across the spectrum?
So for children on the spectrum, this is so interesting because people so often, especially even people that work in this space, want to qualify autism as something very specific. But the truth is, it's so different. That is why it's a wide spectrum of autism. Some are more severe, some are less severe. There are children who have autism who are super high functioning in their language and their speech. And also, it's important to know the difference between speech and language.
But okay, go ahead and break it down for us.
Okay, I was going to say it. Okay, so your language is like basically your dictionary. What are your language skills? Can you express yourself by utilizing your words, your language, but your speech is how you speak. Do you speak with clarity? Do you stutter? Do you swallow sounds? Do you mumble jumble? There's a lot of range of what speech can look like, but you want the ultimate, which is a fluent, articulated speaker and somebody utilizing their language, expressing in sentences, creating a narrative. Narrative is like a little story. So that's the difference between speech and language. And if you really break down, there are many children on the spectrum, they're autistic, but they speak. Some of them have different traits. They can speak in robotic sounds. Some of them speak with some stuttering. Some of them want to express themselves, but they don't have enough language. So really defining that is important. And also, sometimes when you have a more severe autism case, you need to be able to recognize and speak to the parents about potentially having an AAC, an alternative augmentative communication device, which is essentially an iPad or an electronic device. And I know people are like, why would we want to put an electronic device? But it is useful because we teach the child, speech therapist or communication specialist teaches the child to utilize buttons on their pad that speak to them. So if they wanted to introduce themselves, the buttons would say, I am Susie. And then Susie would meet someone new and she would click, I am Susie. And she's not only hearing it, she's also understanding that this is what she has to press. Each of the buttons comes with an icon. And it's a big training, but children do absorb this, and adults who are nonverbal but utilize this to both communicate and to begin to express because they're constantly hearing the computer say it.
Right. And I think that, like, I've seen really on the lower functioning end of the autism spectrum, like, I have a client I'm thinking about, it took time to teach her that she even wanted to communicate, that, you know, sometimes when we're in our own little world and right on the lower end of functioning, she didn't even know that she wanted to communicate with others. And part of the process of working with her iPad and teaching her to communicate was simple things like, I want to go to the bathroom, I want food. So simple wants and needs. And, you know, eventually, I guess the goal is to bring in real language and be able to communicate in a more robust way. But even just, like, it was fascinating working with the speech therapist and watching how this individual was not able to communicate anything, any wants and needs. And then we gave them I think it was like a PEX device.
Yeah.
Right.
There's also different levels of AAC as well. Exactly.
Right.
This ties into your profession too, because then you're doing the motor skill. Oh, you have to press the button. This is what you want to select. Like it. And this is a perfect example, even on the device, how the therapies can work together, especially in autism, especially.
Yeah, and it's really needed because, like you were saying, every child's so different and every child's its own picture. And we have all these different pieces that create a child, the fine motor, the gross motor, the sensory attention, the social emotional, exactly, the language, communicating our wants and needs. So that's really cool. Now, back to speech for a moment. On the communication piece, tell us a little bit about like the higher end of functioning, maybe a little bit about like executive functioning and social interaction.
So that gets tricky too. And a lot of families will come in and they'll request, so do you have a social group where my child can be comfortable to speak and socialize with other children? A lot of the time, unfortunately, there is this separation because of the social dysfunction. Autism does come with that. Sometimes the children that are autistic won't have as much eye contact, or maybe they won't know how to play properly with more than one peer or any peer. So we do work on that and incorporating communication, especially when you're saying higher level. It's really almost confidence building and being like, oh, come and kind of set up the scene and you interact with them as if you're the peer so that they can then utilize those skills moving forward from the speech therapy. So, for example, I can put a fire truck out and like we can say, oh, there's a burning building. What are you going to do? How are we going to play the scene out? And then I'm the fireman and I bring the little guy and we work together and I'm pulling out the communication, the language, and also talking about turn taking and really teaching that social exchange, because a lot of times the autism population doesn't have that. They need to be taught that and worked on. And it's wonderful because it does click and they do get it. But that does fall into the speech therapy and actually across the board, OT, PT, because we work as a collective. So we'll say, oh, like, well, what could you do in OT? Could you hand it to your friend or don't throw the toy, proper exchange? And that also ties into the executive functioning, because then you have to make that decision and or your memory. So for that, often we work on drilling and it's really a learned task. So that's how executive function works. Perhaps if you're missing the skill, like determining if something's right or wrong, making a decision in a situation that's presented to you. There are many interesting tactics when the child's in the perfect, in the right age range, where you can utilize certain questions to help that, you know, I want to say the juices flow, the brain to really start to work and understand and to start to spark up the executive function area so that they can see that if there's a challenge or maybe I shouldn't behave this way. These are decision-making areas that we have to speak about and work on and give examples of. And that's also part of the therapy.
Okay, tell me a little bit about drilling. What's drilling?
Love that. That's a big tactic that I use. And again, every speech pathologist, every therapist, as you know, has their own technique and style and method. So when I work with really any age range kid, I've been successful in a drill play method. So when I say drill, you're a little like imagining I'm drilling it into the head. Whatever it is that I'm teaching, whatever my goal target is, I'm creating games and activities around the goal. And what I do is, in order to practice, maybe we're playing a board game, but the repetition of the session is what's being drilled. So literally, I'm doing something in a circular pattern, whether it's labeling pictures, whether it's repeating sounds, whether it's utilizing sound in a word, we do so in a drill method. I'm literally drilling it into the head because that's what's going to stick. But it takes time. But that's what I mean by drilling.
Oh, okay. And that's great. And repetition's great. And I also always love to like explain to parents how we do these things and we set these things up in the therapy room, really with the hope that obviously we need to do it and replicate it and replicate it and replicate it. And then eventually they should be able to take these skills and take them into the real world and really make that happen.
And there's no set time. And I think that that's the reality. Like, while we're working with the child, we, especially in pediatric and pediatric autism, we're counseling the family. Every session, the family gets information. Every session, they get feedback. They can access in my company. We have a whole database and they have access fully. It's their child to all the session notes, the evaluation. They can pull up information at any time. if they really want, we can sign, you know, something where they get to see some video from the session, they can sit in. There's so many things, but it's the carryover aspect too. You're counseling the family, and not only are you telling them about it, you're giving the example so that they can carry it over in the home, because that brings more success. We're a team. We all have to work together.
And I love that you bring that up, because I do think that we sometimes, when we talk about like the therapy team, we talk about the OT, the PT, the speech, the behavior therapist, but really like mom, dad, caregiver is such an essential piece of that team. And they may be more important than us professionals with your fancy titles. Mom, dad, those are excellent, excellent titles, because you're with the child every single day. And if you join our sessions, if you come in and see what we're doing and actually carry that over, the rate of improvement on the child's skills like shoots up like amazing.
So much. People don't value that. Like one of the first, oh my gosh, and I love when I have an early intervention child or model and they come in, and usually the first thing that I teach them is offering a field of two, because they'll be like, well, my child doesn't talk at all. So I said, okay, next time they want a snack, you take the bananas and then you take the item that they may want, or maybe the bananas is what they want. But you need to present, you parents know things. So you just need to get it out of them. So you're presenting a field of two, so and then further you present a field of three, and that's three items or two items, and then you're showing it and you're labeling each one. And first they're gonna gesture to it. Oh, you wanted the bananas. They're still nonverbal, but now they're selecting. So that's their communication. They gestured to what they wanted. And it's your job as the parent to then fulfill the item. Like imagine, fill in the blank. Oh, it was bananas. Oh, it was apple. Oh, can you say apple? And really utilizing that in the whole too, because it goes that much further. You're so right.
That's amazing. That's really great. Okay, so tell us a teeny bit about your background. You mentioned that you're bilingual. So tell us where you come from and what your experience is with the bilingual piece.
So I'm actually born in Kyiv, Ukraine, and you wouldn't know I don't have an accent, but I came to America when I was 2 years old. My family left. They ran from religious persecution, and we made our way to the States. I was just two. I was coming with a potty on the train and plane and yelling, I have to go to the bathroom. You know, my parents were teaching me then too. But anyway, I became an American citizen, and I've never lost my language skills. There was a time, I feel like in elementary school, where I really wanted to fit in and be American. And then as I grew, my parents always, always shed light to me. They said, you have a gift that not everybody has. You have a different language. You were raised in a home that speaks a different language. We always spoke what we called Ringlish, Russian and English. But my parents also were developing their life here and their career, so they were learning to speak English, and they would, but still upkeep the language. In the home, it wasn't the best. But as I got into high school and I met other peers who spoke my language, I started to utilize it more, and it got stronger. And then even today, I probably sound foreign to the people who are coming from there, but I communicate very well. My message is understood. And the parents that only speak those languages or are new to the country, they're so grateful, because we help them understand what's happening with their child. And I attest that to my culture, my skills, and my parents for never letting me forget it. You know, it's so important. And even my kids today, they're American-born citizens, but we speak Russian and English too, and they went to a bilingual daycare, so they know their language.
Yeah, and that's very cool to have that second skill of speaking to.
It's very special, I feel, for sure.
Two languages. For parents that are navigating the autism world that are immigrants, what kind of advice or thoughts do you have to share?
This is such a touching topic too, because and you want to support everybody, but for the families out there who are new here to this space or are new to the country and lost their services that they had there and are searching for help, if you are in the Philadelphia area, please come and see me. I'd be happy to help you and guide you and see where your child is performing. It's very important not to wait too long for the transition. Your child is in a new place, have lost services for some time. And I'm sure you see regression, but please don't get down on yourself about it. Make moves, take action, find the local place where you could go. And even if they don't speak your language, get a translator. There's language lines. Utilize your phone for translation. And we have to do that sometimes if we don't have the right people in place. But don't wait, because the more you wait, the harder it will be to transition back. The child may begin to develop a lot of regression, which can cause different behaviors. And it causes strain across the board on the family and the child. So if you're here and you're new and you really need help, there's help out there. So please get it as soon as possible.
Yeah, and I feel like a lot of practices are trying their best to really be accommodating. So if a parent is looking for services in a different language, I'm tutoring in New Jersey. We see a lot of Spanish speaking here. I've already incorporated like a Spanish like BCBA that reaches out to do the intake forms. And then when we actually pair up a child with a therapist, we'll pair them up with an RBT that has the same, you know, first language. So really just speaking up and telling your therapist what you need. Like, I feel like therapists out there, we really want to help the kids. And
we are accommodating. Share your needs. Oh, this is such as you. There are so many times people come in, and then later you're like, it's been 3 months. Like, why didn't you say this? Well, I didn't know. Please, parents, we're here for you. Share your needs, share your wants, share your dream for how your child should be. Or, you know, we will do what we can to build that for you. But we need to collaborate, you know?
Right. And parents, you hold the most information, like we were saying before. They really hold the most information, and you know your child the best, and you are your child's best advocate. So go for it. Work, you know, say the things that they can't say so that us therapists could guide the treatment in the proper way. So
absolutely.
That's great. Okay. And now you're also a mom. Tell us a little bit about how you manage the therapy mom relationship. And it's pretty cool how you've, you know, created this whole practice with all the different components going on. Tell us a little bit about your life balance.
I'm a mom of three, and they're all different ages and genders. I have a son who's about to be 9. He's my oldest. And I have a daughter who's 7, and then a little guy who's 3.5. So it's quite tricky. And over the years, a lot of mom guilt, because I'm with other kids and other families, and it's like, where's my family? But I do my very best to plan, spread my time properly, and I want to give my kids the attention and time that they need, whether it's all together or separately. They all have different activities, and I do my best to encourage them and engage with them. But they do see that mom's making a difference, and they understand and value the importance. And if they see someone who needs help or something, they'll come and tell mommy, I think that so-and-so's brother could use speech therapy. And I said, okay, we'll tell them to call us. But I love that they recognize how hard working I am in the business, and they actually, I think, really appreciate it, because I love to be that example for them. Nothing comes easily. I didn't come from money. My parents didn't own any big business. They worked for places. They tried to make it in a variety of things. And I think that being that example to my kids, and it's worth the juggle, you know, because they're the future, and I want them to understand and become established individuals as well. But yes, being a working mom entrepreneur is extremely hard. But for me, the big change came when I put some higher level people in place to really manage and run my locations. It opened up some more time for me to be able to spend with my family, to watch my kids grow, to have more time to go to dinner, whatever it is. But I still learn every day. I still struggle sometimes, because it's my personality. I would like to be everywhere at one time, and it's just not physically possible. So continuing to remind myself that I'm only human, I cannot feel guilty over everything, and it is my job to ensure my oldest baby, my company, Kinology, succeeds, yeah, but also that my wonderful children are growing up properly and getting the care and love that they need.
Yeah, and I also feel like I'm also a mom therapist, right? So I feel like as a mom, we do see the world a little bit differently, because we're almost, you know, every child, neurodivergent or neurotypical, has their wants, their needs. And I feel like when I come into a room, I do feel that I could understand parents on a very different level, because we have that background of saying, Okay, been there, done that, struggled with that. So that's really...
I love, and over the years, I've always done this. I utilize examples of my life and examples to parents to just be like, I'm real. I'm in the same shoes. Just because I'm a speech therapist doesn't mean my kids don't do X, Y, Z. We all have growing pains in our own way. And I love that human connection. And I love sharing it. And I think people really appreciate it, too, because then they're like, oh, I'm not alone. You know?
Yeah, I was actually at a therapist for one of my own children recently, and the therapist was laughing, and my daughter was really acting out in an embarrassing way, and you know, I was just doing the smile thing, like, okay, this is her. It's not a reflection of me, right? It's just who she is. We're each our own individuals, and the therapist looked at me and she said, you know, God gives everybody, especially the therapist, children, so that they could better understand their clients. And I say, yes, yes, we're all moms. We're all out there. We're all struggling, and we're there to support each other. So, you know, it's fun to wear all the different hats.
This is like so beautiful what you said. And this past summer, I actually got certified in myofunction therapy because it's something that generally only dentists and speech language pathologists do, because it's all about oral functionality, the function of the tongue, nasal breathing, all things relative to dentistry and speech. And my youngest son, he's the 3.5-year-old, he's the one who actually inspired that. And I was given this so that I could learn and fix it in my own child and then help others. And there are so many people with this need out there. I didn't even know how much it was needed and how many people struggle. It's all about...
Tell us a little bit about it. I would love to hear the background of what it is.
So myofunction therapy, like I said, it's all about the structuring and functionality of your oral features. And essentially, if not corrected early on, can, God forbid, turn into sleep apnea as adults. And that is very dangerous. It also deforms your face because the posture changes. The minute that you're a mouth breather every day because you're not used to or accustomed to breathing through your nose, or you physically can't, you begin to breathe with your mouth. And then it's like you're like gasping. You have this like tilted posture. Your mouth is open. Your tongue is out. And it distorts your entire face. It also gives you more chance of getting sick because you're drying out your whole throat. And it's just a bad situation, period. So what it does, if there's children out there who have enlarged adenoids or tonsils and they're getting sick more often, it is first recommended that those things are removed. That doesn't fix the problem. We also have under our tongue a small piece of skin called the frenum or frenulum. People have different names for it. So when a child is born, and this you'll often hear about, if they're not latching well in feeding or if something's going on with their mouth, the first test you do is to see if they have a tongue tie. So if they do, there's professionals who will laser cut a little bit, and they're not like physically cutting off your tongue. That's not, it seems crazy, but it's a little snip just to loosen so that the child has more ability to manipulate with the tongue. And when you're such a small baby, your suck is different. It's like an in and out motion versus like how adults will like suck on lollipop. That's different, or ice cream. It's a different type of suckle, and it's needed in order to breastfeed. And immediately, like, people will recognize that there's a problem, and then tongues are checked as babies. And sometimes we'll do the snip, and then we give a series of exercises. But if it happens later, so say, and most people, it's insane, do have this tongue tie and never got it fixed and just manage their whole life. But they don't realize that just like not having a myofascial release from like a PT or a massage standpoint, it causes tension on your body. And it also can cause headaches because it's all like little tiny crevices on your mouth, and it connects here and here. And it's so important, not just for sleep apnea, but just for well-being.
So how would a parent like identify that their child needed this sort of therapy?
If you're noticing your child snoring, getting sick a lot, you need to immediately evaluate the reasons behind it. Most children don't just get this for no reason. And if they can go to a speech therapist, they can go to a dentist, or a pediatrician will be able to tell you, but then they'll send you out anyway. But that means that they can't touch the roof of their mouth. So if you can't, and if you close your mouth, think about where your tongue is positioned. It's in the roof. It's in the upper mandibular tract. It should fit between your teeth. If it's not there or you can't physically reach it, you are a candidate for like the laser cut because you have a tongue tie and it's going to cause complications just because of the physical built, the way you were built. Then if you have an adenoid issue, this is different and you're going to be getting sick more often and you're going to have a clogged nose. So that is going to cause being unable to breathe. And if you can't breathe formally through your nose, you're going to begin having that open mouth posture and breathing through your mouth. So it's just like a domino effect of issues. And you need to get an oral examination. So as a myofunction therapist, if this is all figured out and whether you're somebody who didn't get the cut yet or you already did or you got your adenoids and your tonsils removed, speech therapist is where you have to go to get the myofunction therapy afterwards because these are all solutions that will fix. They're the first step. But your mind memory already does these things. You're already breathing this way. You're already struggling. So unless you work and strengthen your muscles not to, those surgeries don't matter. People don't understand. The therapy is the reversal. You still must go. So if you've gotten a tongue tie, adenoid removal, or tonsil remover, please immediately see a speech therapist or a dentist for myo. Because if
to,
you don't
to get like that, sort of train those muscles. To train those muscles to work again properly.
Muscles. Yes. And there's so much history and studies. And it does also, you can go to ENT and they'll tell you, oh, it's allergy related. So my little guy, what happened is I would notice him snoring or teeth grinding. He's an eczema boy. He had a lot of allergies. Now he's 3.5, he's grown out of many, but the habits stay. And they also sell myotape and a lot of adults. It's very popular in Hollywood now. Gwyneth Paltrow talks about it. But closed mouth is a better night's sleep. Better night's sleep is better rest, you look younger. I mean, it's a whole thing. For the kiddos, the tape goes over as well. It looks like kind of like kinesio tape. It's a cloth, but it has a slit in the middle so that they can breathe, but it closes the mouth. You need the mouth to be closed when you're sleeping. When you're not eating or talking, your mouth should be closed, period. You shouldn't be like this. This is a problem.
Open mouth posture.
Open mouth posture is a problem. So that is what I want to give back now. This myofunction, it's so important. And people don't even know. You can't imagine. And now you can't unsee it. When I go to the supermarket, when I'm out and about and I see this, I almost want to come up to you and be like, hi, can I help you?
Let me just put you in the right direction.
But unfortunately, a lot of people don't see it. And it does become harmful and dangerous when you're older. And there's actually people 25 and under who have the CPAP and these oxygen machines. And I'm like, you are not 95 years old. There is no reason that you're on this. Like, work on a fix-it therapy. But it's Western world, you know, so.
Yeah, and from the occupational therapy perspective, Mary Masary gives a great course called If You Can't Breathe, You Can't Function. And we look at breathing from a different perspective if we're not sleeping at night, then right, our brains are not recharging properly, and then our body doesn't want to function as well. In addition, like if we're not taking in the breath into our core and expelling it out, then our physical body can't move properly. And if our brains are so distracted by the breathing, then our bodies can't move properly. So breathing is a huge piece that sometimes gets missed and is so important.
This is crucial. And the right breathe. Well, what you were saying, if you're not, but also, and I didn't mention this before, but these are different types of oxygen. If you're constantly breathing only through your mouth, you're actually getting less of the proper oxygen. But if you're inhaling through your nose, which is why they teach you that even in yoga, like, look how much more I can get. And I have a full lung and I can like, you know, but this all goes hand in hand. It's truly amazing. And I think that it's the breathing piece, and especially for the autistic community. The minute that people come in, and I teach my therapist this too, I'm like, you need to regulate the child. The minute you regulate the child and the parent with a couple of breathing techniques from the start, your session is going to go that much better because we're all regulated. What do they tell people if you're overwhelmed, if you're stressed out? Ground yourself, listen to your breathing. It's the same. And that, especially for somebody who's technically already a bit dysregulated, you do want to regulate them. And then you're just teaching them good habits for themselves. If they're somewhere and they're feeling that, they're going to go back to that because it does calm you down.
Like for a parent that sees a child who has open mouth posture, suspects that there's these kinds of issues, are there any advice that you could give that they could start implementing today? Or is it something that they must seek out like a therapist
for? No, I mean, at home, if they wanted to try, but this is a constant. I mean, you have to be the type of parent that's okay to kind of quote unquote annoy your kid, but come up, be like, oh, close your mouth. Or like tuck the thing and or lay with them and see how they're laying. And just you have to constantly manually do it and talk about it with them. Or you can practice some techniques, which are taught in the therapy sessions as well. But it's my job when the child comes. Again, I'm drilling these things, but I'm working on like their silly fun games like bubbles and blowing. But a lot of them, like we do one where we put a straw in the mouth and then you have to blow like it's a game. We take a little crumpled paper and who wins? But the entire time they're breathing with their nose because we're blowing with the mouth and the mouth is closed. So it's constricting the airway there. So it's the parents kind of do something like that at home.
Yeah. And that from an occupational therapy perspective, like even the motor planning, which means like planning out how my body's going to do whatever it is that my brain wants to tell it to do. So like helping your child to actually have closure around the straw and to be able to blow out and blow in and breathe in. Like I sometimes give my kids the cue of like, smell the roses.
Yes.
And like, nice. I'll even put my finger under their nose to like explain to them and so that I could get the feeling that they're breathing in and then like blow out the candles. That could be just a hard motor plan.
This is how I taught my kids to blow their nose, actually.
Exactly.
There are techniques, and that's why as mothers, we're in that much stronger a provider because we've lived it. We live it, and we can share not only the academic skills, we have the education, but we live the life.
Right, and we actually sit and implement it day in, day out, right? But that breathing is a really nice technique, and it's something to watch out for that we kind of miss. Now, you also just mentioned yoga. How does a speech therapist get to being yoga trained? Tell me a little bit about that.
Several years ago, every year as a therapist, we need to have continuing education. So I was in a program for CEU, continuing education, short CEU, where that season it was open to OTPTs and speech. You could get a pediatric yoga certificate if you did this training. So I went for one day, maybe 2 days or one day, to a hotel. And there was a big, huge CEU training. And we worked in groups. And they taught us how to provide breathing techniques, proper yoga, to work with pediatrics. And there were all people there, speech, OTPT. There was a variety of us. And it was so interesting because, again, self-regulation. If a child can't speak, they can't get their message across, they might be causing themselves stress, causing nervous system dysregulation. And imagine you come to speech therapy and the first 5 minutes, it's enough. You breathe, you sit on the mat, you do a couple poses and you move on to your session. It just allows you and the child to be more productive. And especially when we learned then too, for children with a variety of disability or dysfunction, specifically to autism, it is crucial. Like your whole session can be the yoga because it encompasses so many things. Not only the regulation and breathing for health and the positions for calming down and blood circulation, but following instructions, being able to guide and assist them hand over hand so that they can produce those same things you're doing. Because a lot of the yoga is following an instruction. Like you're listening.
Right. And I love how you bringing that in, how we could incorporate language in everyday life. So just a child
and
understanding.
That ties back to the executive function too, because you're listening, your decisions. Oh, I have to put my arm like this and my leg like this. And we always clap in the end. We do like, you know, it's so centering.
It's very centering, and it also incorporates so many different skill sets. Like you said, the motor planning, figuring out how to put my body, understanding next to, behind, in front, all the prepositions. And then there might be a social component to yoga as well, interacting when you see other people. So I love how really we're all so interrelated. All the professions really come together, and a child's like a whole picture, and you can't really weed out like, this is this therapy, this is this therapy, this is that therapy, because like life just requires so many different skills, and it's amazing how you've come to collaborate all the skills into like one umbrella.
Yeah, I mean, thanks for putting it that way. It's funny from the side how, you know, because when you're living in it, you don't always connect it that way. But if you really paint this picture from the side, and you're 100% right, it all ties in together. And I'm so happy to be able to be that one-stop place for people. So if they come and they have a question for me, and I can offer advice from this breathing perspective, or the yoga, or Mayo, or regular speech, whatever it might be, I'm just so happy I can give that to them.
Okay, so you are so informative, Luba, today. We really enjoyed having you on. If you had one message that you wanted to leave our listeners off with, what would it be?
I think that life, I mean, just do your best to be that stableness for your child. I know that often as a parent of a child with disabilities, your world is crashing down. It's a lot to manage, but you're that child's hero. And if you crumble, they're going to crumble. But if you're their warrior, they're going to be a warrior. And there's a whole grouping. There's so many people out there willing to help you and who want to be your shoulder and who want to be your rock. Take the help. Ask for help. Take the help. Take the advice. We're all here for you so that you can be a better parent to better your child's tomorrow. So that's my message. I hope that whoever needs to hear it heard me today from the bottom of my heart, honestly.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Luba. You are amazing.
Thank you so much, Leah. Thanks for having me.